Mr. Park, it's been 4 days now and this fool, Caldwell, refuses to let anyone journey outside of the colony perimeter. It's dumbfounded that Oasis saw fit to put this oaf in charge. I assume they were blinded by the shine of his military medals. He's one of those insufferable idiots who believes in codes, ideals, commands, oaths, morals, and blindly follows this no matter the cost. I've tried subtly to reason with the man, to ingratiate myself and offer friendship or counsel. But he's nothing but stoic and cold. A bribe is out of the question. At the time this missing colonist incident happened, I considered it a minor nuisance that would put us back by no more than a day or two. But it's been almost a week! And for what purpose? I do not know what Caldwell hopes to gain by having us all cowering in our tents. I've petitioned him to launch a larger expedition. There was an initial search, of course, but only a few kilometers into the trees, from what I understand. I told him we should consider organizing a greater number of volunteers and extend the searches. Between you and I don't expect to find this missing girl. At least not alive. But a well-supplied group could serve dual purposes. They could bring some kind of resolution to her disappearance, by at least finding her corpse, and also begin the necessary surveying work we are so far behind on. Of course, Caldwell outright refuses to consider it. Without operational rovers or drone support, he's content to build a wall and wait. What's more is he went further to lecture me. That's right, me, on the priorities of the colony. Until security and safety can be established for the colonists, he considers mining operations of little significance. While safety may be his number one responsibility, Oasis did not establish this colony as a haven or resort for tourists. We're here to do a job. We're here to make money. He's dismissive of all of this, which was irritating, but I didn't press the argument. We obviously do not see eye to eye. If he continues to be such a hindrance, it may be necessary to petition Oasis for his removal. But in the meantime, I am stuck here and going stir crazy. You don't know what it's like being trapped in a place without the usual intellectual stimulation. The other colonists are simple-minded fools. Most of them are laborers, and those that aren't are quite dull. I never thought I would say it, but I miss the cultural society I left back home. If not for my books, there'd be nothing else to do but stare at the rain. Count yourself lucky, Mr. Park.
Science log, entry C8, Dr. Lauren Wood. I've set up a dozen different culture tests on the fungi that's been so prevalent in this region, feeding a few DNA samples into our computers so I can accelerate the analysis. Due to the color of its multitude of spores, the rich, dark red, I've named it the Crimson Frost. Although its cellular structure is nothing like we have on Earth, it is most similar to fungi found in the Ascomycota phylum. If it does have a similar morphology and life cycle as some Ascomycota found on Earth, it is possible that it could be parasitic. This is my primary concern, especially considering how prevalent it is in this region. As a precaution, I've informed the security teams to alert me if any of it is found growing anywhere inside our colony walls.
Hey gang, Ty here with more messages from space. Just kidding, but seriously, this is TyCast. So, since my last episode, I've begun asking around to try to get some details about this missing colonist. I haven't learned very much about her except her full name, Annabelle Gordon, but what I have found out is this. Her disappearance isn't the only strange thing that's been going on around here. I don't know how much to believe at this point, but more than one colonist I've spoken to has mentioned things. Seeing movement in the trees around the colony, hearing unexplained noises at night. Some even say they've seen Annabelle since her disappearance. Like Patelgarang. Patel works with one of the construction crews near the shoreside, installing docks. He said yesterday he and some of his crew spotted what they thought was a large fish in the water. The waves were pretty choppy, so they couldn't get a good look, but he said there was some kind of dark shape bobbing in the surf. He says, no, he swears that right before it vanished completely, he saw the pale skin and wet matted hair of a corpse. Or there's Monty Young, a member of the security crew. He stands watches on the perimeter each night, and he's told me he's seen movement in the trees and heard sounds. Not like big animal sounds, not growls or hisses. He says sometimes it sounds like voices. He couldn't make out any words, but believes whatever it was probably the same thing that took Annabelle. In fact, all of the security personnel I spoke to think so. With the exception of Cash, who wouldn't go on record. Something tells me he doesn't listen to the show. And then there's Gelly McBride. She's an older woman, in her early 70s, who works as a nurse at the infirmary. She claims she's seen Annabelle in the flesh the day after she vanished. It was in the evening. She had been sitting at the entrance of her tent, watching the thunderstorms roll in. It was coming down in sheets that night. That's when she saw her. Annabelle. She was just standing there, motionless, right inside the gate. Gelly said there was something about her eyes. They were dark. I didn't understand what she meant by that. Well, no one else seemed to notice Annabelle, so Gelly decided to go and bring her in from the cold. But when she turned to get her rain poncho and exit the tent, Annabelle had gone. She asked some colonists nearby and checked with the security details on duty. No one else had seen her. And finally, there's Annabelle's husband, Gerard. Turns out he saw his wife recently too. In a way. He had been avoiding me, but I finally caught up with him today after his work shift. Most of his crew had retreated to the mess hall, but he was just standing out near the gate. He was staring out at the trees like he expected his wife to come walking back any second. He wasn't very interested in talking. It was clear he wanted to be left alone. I didn't want to push my luck. He was a big guy after all. So all I asked him about was the last time he saw Annabelle. Hoping to maybe stir a good memory, maybe build some kind of trust. But then he looks at me with this funny expression and says, I saw her last night. He says he had a dream about her. In it, she was standing in the woods, scared and alone. Covered in moss and mud and leaves and vines, she was pleading with him to come find her. She said she was waiting for him in Ashboro. Anyway, I think I made him upset. After he told me this, it was like he came out of a daze. Suddenly, he was furious. He stormed off, pushing me aside. So, yeah. The guy's taken it pretty hard. I think I'll steer clear of him from now on. Anyway, you might be starting to get the picture. People here are a little creeped out right now. All this talk of visions and voices is giving them second thoughts. They're all starting to wonder why they're here, and starting to realize how dangerous the unknown is. But not me. Danger and the unknown are good for viewers and listenership. Speaking of which, like and subscribe. I'll catch y'all soon. Bye out.
Log entry for TAC 517 Alpha, Caldwell, Liam. The supply ship is delayed. It should have arrived this morning. Sometimes the transport freighters need to make micro-course adjustments that can throw off arrival by a few hours, so it's not unusual. Not yet. I'm expecting it here by mid-afternoon, tomorrow morning at the latest. I'll need to pull some personnel off the construction crews to help with stores and parts unload. Thankfully, the perimeter is almost completed. I spent the morning overseeing some of this construction. I took Apollo with me. It doesn't look pretty, but it does provide some defense. Cordy and Davis repurposed a motor from one of the mining drills and managed to rig up an automated gate. The added work has been a positive distraction for most of the colonists. some of the initial panic has been quelled. Even so, I can sense a growing restlessness manifesting in its place. People believe more should be done, and that we shouldn't so quickly abandon any hope of finding Annabelle. I don't disagree, but I want to be cautious about charging into the woods blind and without the proper tools. Not everyone shares this viewpoint. The investors have been pressing me for action. One in particular, a man named Whitlock, pesters me continually regarding my plans for her rescue. He suggested Annabelle might have ventured to Ashboro, that whatever force had devastated the settlement might have some reason to draw her there. His motives were obvious. Investors like him don't travel across the galaxy to mount rescue missions and play hero. It's apparent his rescue party will be less about finding Annabelle and more about scouting for ideal mining locations. Still, this talk of Ashboro has bothered me. It wasn't the first time I've heard it proposed. What happened at the Lost Colony will always hang like a specter over everything we do here. The name is conjured up as a possible cause for anything bad that happens or could happen. People whisper it to one another when there are severe rainstorms, or if there are unusual noises from the trees. I can't blame them. I saw the images of the few colonists that had survived. Something had driven them to insanity. Their crazy, hungry eyes is something I'll never forget.
Dear sister, I had a startling experience this afternoon. I was returning from the kitchen. I am assigned there now to help the cooks. And I was on my way back to the church when I was accosted by Mr. Gordon, Annabelle's husband. He came up behind me as I walked and seized my arm. I was so startled I nearly fell over. He didn't look well, like he hadn't slept in days. I don't know how to describe it. He looked crazed. I tried to pull away, but his grip was unmovable. He asked me, loudly, in the middle of the street, where she was, what I had done with Annabelle. He thinks somehow I know, or had something to do with her disappearance. Other people nearby were looking at us. They didn't intervene, they only stared. I know some of them already view me with suspicion, but now this? Mr. Gordon didn't seem to notice them, or didn't care. He was ranting. He said he had dreams where Annabelle comes to him. She tells him I wouldn't help her that day, that it was my fault. Obviously, I was scared. He was practically shouting this when the security team showed up to intervene. They managed to calm him down and finally get him to let me go. Some of them asked me if I was okay. I was too rattled to respond. Instead, I hurried away and back to the church. I hate to admit it, sister, but I was nearly in tears. I had heard rumors about his condition even before Annabelle had disappeared, and his behavior all but confirmed them. The fierce look in his eyes. It was a madness. A madness brought on by his overindulgence. His squandering and gluttony of the sacred gift. I could see the stains on his teeth and gums. There's no question what he would have done if no one had intervened. He would have killed me, I believe. I'm sorry. Saying something like that will get you worried. Please don't fret. I am safe here. Safe enough within our colony's walls and with the Reverend, anyhow. The Chosen and the fate that guides us all will keep me safe until our work is done. Keep me in your thoughts, sister. May the star's blessing shine upon you.
Personal log, Dr. Lauren Wood. It's become my habit to go for runs each morning. As soon as the sky begins to lighten, I trade in my coveralls for old sweats and slip outside. Even though the wall is completed, there is a section near the barracks where one can easily climb over. Once on the other side, I don't go far. Actually, I don't go anywhere. I run around the perimeter. 5 laps make for 1 mile. I usually run 20 to 30. It helps me think. This morning was the first time I had ventured away from the wall. I hadn't planned to, but in the middle of my 3rd lap, as the daylight started to reveal more of the surrounding fields, I notice an unusual shape, a dark mound rising out of the grass several dozen yards from the perimeter wall. I couldn't see clearly what it was, but I knew it hadn't been there yesterday. I called up to the sentry, pointing him in the direction. He did a quick scan and told me it looked like a mound of dirt. I wasn't satisfied. I jogged out through the grass to take a look for myself. The mound wasn't red as dirt at all. It was the carcass of one of the creatures we'd seen so often in these fields. It lay in a crumpled ruin amid the grass, its entire body covered in a furry, thick coating of the crimson frost fungus. Clearly it had died here recently, but I wondered exactly how long the fungus had been growing on it. Was it the cause of death? I also saw the fungus had grown out from the body on all sides. It was growing on the blades of grass and along the roots near the ground. A trail of ant-like insects wound their way through the field here, and I noticed the path they chose skirted the dead creature's body and the surrounding patches of fungi. The discovery has made me more nervous. I suspected it was aggressive, but was it also predatory? I would need to get samples from the carcass. I told the sentry to alert Caldwell and have him meet me outside. As I waited, I couldn't help but notice the exterior of our brand new perimeter wall was covered in the red fungus. Not only near the base, but all of it. The entire surface.
Bad news, little bro. As I mentioned in my last message, I've been troubleshooting some of the issues we're having with the drones. Well, today, I think I finally found the problem. And it's not good. When I first began troubleshooting, I started with the obvious. Basic analysis and diagnostics of each of the remaining intact drones. This all checked out, which makes sense. That would be way too simple. Next, I pulled a few of the circuit boards for physical inspection. I figured it may have been possible that the precipitation had caused some kind of short, but I found the internal seals were all intact, and the circuits checked out fine. Finally, I started an AI-assisted visual scan of the complete programming code, and I mean all of it. Process management, interrupts, memory, file subsystems. And that's when I found it. It was several hours into the scan when the computer flagged an unknown line of code in one of the protocols of the operating system. It was one of the more reliable programs Oasis had created, so it was unusual to see any alterations. But soon, the scan was flagging over 24 unknown code errors. It was immediately obvious that the strange code was malicious. It was working like a computer virus, going about its business of rewriting and destroying the original program. Fearing the worst, I ran the scans on the rest of the drones, on the field rovers, and even some of the computer systems and the mining equipment. All of them had the same unknown code. It was working its way through the programming and all of our Oasis equipment like a tumor. We were being sabotaged. I immediately went to Governor Caldwell. I found him with Lauren, near the perimeter fence. Obviously, they were shocked. Caldwell wanted to know if it was reversible, if any of the equipment could be salvaged. I told him I didn't think so. Lauren was pretty quiet, like she was processing this information, like it reminded her of something else. She asked me if I thought it was possible the sabotage might have extended beyond the drones and vehicles, if our transport shuttles might have been infected, and if it could have caused damage to hibernation pods. I told her I didn't know. I'll tell you what I do know. I'm pretty spooked, man. Other than those two, I'm keeping this close to the chest. You have to keep this quiet, too. I don't know if somebody back home was responsible. Could it be somebody inside Oasis? If so, then why would they want to sabotage their own expedition? Their own colony?
Is this Elizabeth Devereaux, the writer?
I was a reporter for the Globe, if that's what you mean.
I might have a story for you, if you're interested.
And what would that be about?
Murder.
I adored Mr. Croft. We trusted each other.
His work had the potential to change how we thought about our place in the universe.
Aiden was different. He was exciting, a real alpha man, and that's my type, obviously.
I'd known him since we both were undergrads at Harvard. We didn't exactly run in the same sort of crowd back then.
He said he was worried Adam's life was in danger. The threats had been made.
It was a mess. There were 8 stab wounds in the back, and the throat was cut. Oh, there was a lot of blood.
I want you to interview the suspects and tell me who's lying.
You were the last person to see him alive.
Other than the murderer, you mean?
Aiden collected Rothko's to hang on his bathroom wall. We didn't exactly run in the same circles.
You think I finally had enough and stabbed him to death? Cut his throat?
I don't want you to contact her again. She called me last night. She was hysterical.
Aiden could be a real bastard, but that doesn't mean I wanted him dead.
At the time, I didn't think much of it, but I noticed one of the steak knives was missing.
It was filled with books and paintings about the occult. Pentagrams and pyramids.
But there were accusations.
No matter what anyone says or thinks, I always respected Aiden Croft.
There was a bad energy. Aiden's death was not the first, nor was it the last.
You're talking about the affair.
You know about that?
There was someone spying on Croft.
I asked you to speak with the guests. It sounds like you're digging up more bodies.
This isn't about finding out who was in the library with the candlestick. There's no way anyone was in the room.
You see, the means and the motives weren't the problem with this case. That night, no one had the opportunity.
From the creator of the Oasis Transmissions comes a new original story. 7 Suspects, an audio fiction whodunit. Follow each episode to unravel who's lying, who's telling the truth, and who murdered Aiden Croft. 7 Suspects. Listen and subscribe on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you stream your podcasts.